All right, let's get started. Today we're on the Book of Ruth. I hope all of you guys read this book because it's only four chapters. It's pretty easy. It's a short but sweet one.
Time to put your phones down and grab your notebooks.
Oh, look, they are here. Grab your notebooks. They're up there now.
One copy.
Okay. Nick said he can give his up. I only printed 20.
Yeah, here.
I've been printing 25 copies, and then we have like 8 copies left over. So I'm like, I'll just do 20 today. And now we're going to run out. Okay. Book of Ruth. What do you guys know about Ruth? Yeah.
She was super cool. Married Boaz.
Not you. Jacob.
She was cool.
We got more.
Guys.
She lived in Canaan and she stayed loyal to Naomi and went back to Israel.
She didn't live in Canaan, but she did go back to Israel with Naomi.
She's black?
I don't think so. Tristan.
She was a cool person.
She what?
She was a cool person.
She was a cool person. Jackson, your notebook. Brendan, where'd you put Jackson's notebook? Oh, I can't see it because of the... That's yours. Yeah, she did like macaroni. Big fan. She's a big fan of macaroni. I have no idea if she's a big fan of macaroni. I don't think they had pasta in the Middle East in these times. What's up? Uh-huh. There's so much. You can't contain it, except maybe in four books. Four chapters, I mean.
What's the summary of the book?
Yeah.
I have a whole book about
her.
I have a whole book about her. Like, literally, it's a separate book.
Okay. So, anybody else got anything about Ruth? That they like or don't like? Yeah.
She was sort of, like, great faith.
Yes, she had great faith. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Okay. She what?
Raced F1 cars.
God, it took me forever to figure out what you were saying. I'm like, these words don't make sense. Probably because I wasn't thinking you were saying raced F1 cars about Ruth from, you know, 3,000 years ago. No, I don't think she raced F1 cars. I'm pretty sure. At least it's not in the Bible if she did. Okay, Ruth, the Book of Restoration. Written around 1050 B.C., authored by Samuel, four chapters, 85 verses, 2,578 words. It covers a time span of about 10 years. The 50,000-foot summary is, Ruth teaches us that a close relationship with our Redeemer is possible, despite living in an age of sin and idolatry. The key verse, let's read that real quick, Ruth 3:13. Need your Bibles for this, people. Who doesn't have a Bible? Hallie McGuire. Your father is a pastor at this church. This is going on recording. Everyone's going to know this.
I was rushed yesterday. She woke me up, told me I had to come to a youth event that was in like an hour. So I had to
shower. About what time?
You were so lazy.
She only had 1 hour to get ready for that event that started.
See, I had an hour and a half to eat, pack up, and shower. So I don't have time to think about it.
The event was at 4.
Okay. Who else needs a Bible? Aaron, you got a Bible? Elias. Oh, you got a Bible. Okay, get it out. Get it open, bro.
I need a Bible.
Huh?
I need a Bible.
You guys are going to have to share one, I guess. All right, Brendan, get a Bible for one of these ladies, please. I'm going to start calling you guys out by name on the recording. Claire Morrow, no Bible. Jessa Morrow, no Bible. Hallie McGuire, no Bible. Elena Gibson, no Bible. Aaron, last name unknown, no Bible. Smith, Aaron Smith. That's too generic, man. That could be anybody. Aaron Smith? Like a million of those. Okay. John Doe. Yeah, basically John Doe didn't bring his Bible. Ruth chapter 3, verse 13. Somebody read it. Zevin's going to start reading it here in a second. Somebody read it. Ruth 3:13.
Tarry this night and that a evil perform on well, when you do, you can
do the shh. Cameron.
To thee, then will I do part of him to thee, as the Lord liveth right now.
Okay, so the key verse, it's talking about the kinsman redeemer, which we're going to talk about a little bit. So that's the key verse in the chapter. The Christ shows up in Ruth. Boaz is a type of Christ. He is our kinsman redeemer who redeemed us from the bondage of slavery and sin. Interestingly enough, it is also 3:13, but in Galatians. Flip over there, hold your place in Ruth, because we're coming back. Galatians 3:13. Somebody read that one for me.
Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us, for it is written, cursed is everyone that hangeth on a tree.
Okay, so Christ redeemed us in the way that, not in the same way, but Boaz redeemed Ruth, and so it's a type for us of how Christ redeemed us. We're going to find out a little bit more about what that means as we go along. Okay, so there's a list of characters here that are listed out for you that are in this book. Elimelech, his name means God is my king. So that was Ruth's father-in-law. That was the dad. That was Naomi's husband. And he is a, what does he represent for us? He represents a backsliding Christian who gives up on God when times get tough. He forsook God's provision and God's people when physical circumstances got tough. I want you to go back to Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. It says, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, so we just talked about that last week, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Okay, so what we find out right here about Elimelech, we don't find out his name yet, but in the next verse we find out that that's Elimelech. But we find out that there's a famine going on in Israel, right? And instead of seeking God or instead of, you know, staying there, he chooses to leave. And so we know that Egypt is a type of what in the Bible? The world, okay? So Moab is not necessarily a type of the world, but Moab is an enemy of Israel. Every time you look at the word Moab in the Bible, they are at, not every time you look at them, they're at war with Israel, but they are always an enemy of Israel. They've got false gods that they worship, and when you see the country of Moab show up, the Moabites, they're at odds with Israel. And so he chooses to leave his home in Israel and go to enemy territory. And so, so it's a picture for us, or at least a reminder for us, that we should not be going to the world or to the things that the world has to offer when things get difficult. Okay? I'm sure he wasn't the only Israelite leaving Israel, but many of them chose to stick it out, and Elimelech decided to flee and to go to, of all places, Moab, which is a wicked place. Okay, so we see Naomi. Her name means pleasant. She is a Christian who strays from God. She goes out from God full and comes back to God empty. She lost everything while living in the world. Okay, so look at verse 20 of chapter 1. So if you guys don't know the story of it, what happens, which we'll get more into in a minute, basically her and her husband leave with their two sons. They go to Moab. The sons get married. And then the sons and the dad all die, right? And then the daughters-in-law, you know, they say, oh, we'll come back with you, Naomi, because Naomi's going to go back home to Israel. And they say, we'll go back with you. And she kind of says, no, you guys stay here. And one of the daughter-in-laws stays. And then Ruth, you know, is the faithful one. She says, no, I'm going to come with you. And we'll read one of the verses about that here in a second. So her and Naomi come back. But when Naomi comes back, in verse 20 of chapter 1, And she said unto them, this is Naomi talking, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. So Mara means bitter. Okay, so her name means pleasant. And so when she comes back, she's like, I'm not pleasant anymore. God has dealt with me bitterly, so I want you to call me Mara, because my life is full of bitterness now. I'm bitter against God for taking my husband and my sons away from me. I'm bitter against God because He didn't do what I wanted him to do. We left looking for a better life, right? That we left because there was famine. We wanted to survive and have a better life for our family. But what happened was I went to the world and I came back and I'm empty. And like I don't have anything. I'm bringing back my daughter-in-law with me, but that's it. I've lost my sons and I've lost my husband. And so she comes back and she wants them to call her Mara. But I want you guys to look at verse 21 that says, I went out full and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me and the Almighty hath afflicted me, hath afflicted me. And so she goes on to say why she wants them to call her Mara. But then the very next verse says, so Naomi returned and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her. And so nowhere else in this book is she called Mara. And so I think it's interesting that that's the case, because she says, call me Mara. Don't call me Naomi anymore. My life isn't pleasant. Things are not going so well for me. And God says, I'm not calling you Mara. I'm not going to record your name as Mara anywhere else in this book. Right? Because your life is not full of bitterness. You have Ruth, and God's going to redeem and give her, give Naomi some hope through all of this as well. So obviously the story focuses really on Ruth, and how God redeemed her through Boaz, and how he set up a lineage for her with, you know, David being her grandson and all of that, King David. But it's also a story of like redemption in the, in for Naomi, cause she goes from coming back saying, I'm just full of bitterness against God cause he didn't deal with me the way I wanted him to. But as the story goes on, you see Naomi kind of get some hope back as well when she finds out that Ruth has met Boaz, and she's like, Boaz is one of our kin. Like, he could redeem you. And she gets hopeful. And so God's like, I don't care what your current situation is or what your, how you currently feel. I'm not going to call you by that name. Your name means pleasant, and I'm going to give you some hope and redeem you in, this story as I redeem Ruth. And so, it's a good story, good picture for us, that just because we feel a certain way about something in our current situation, maybe your situation is not great and you don't feel so like hopeful, or you don't feel so excited about what God might have for you, that doesn't mean that you have to stay in that place. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to stay feeling that way. By the end of the story, I don't think Naomi would have wanted to be called Mara anymore, right? She gets to be around her grandchild that Ruth and Boaz have, and she has hope again. And so just because her current state when she comes back home is that she's full of bitterness, she doesn't stay there. And so God doesn't want to call her that. He's not identifying her as someone who's bitter. Okay, you're going through a moment right now where you are bitter, but we're going to fix that. Like, God doesn't leave her there. And so I think it's a good redemption story for Naomi as well. All right, so then we have Mahlon and Chilion. Those are the two boys. Their names mean sick and puny. I don't know why you would name your child sick and puny. I don't know. I mean, meanings of names in the Bible are really important. So why they would have called them names that meant sick and puny, I don't know. But their names both, their characters both represent a person in the family of God who is disobedient and dies for it. Then we have Ruth. Her name means friendly. She represents a sinner who gets saved. She's a Gentile who forsook her family and her gods of the world and sought her Redeemer by humbly bowing at his feet. So Ruth might be, she's definitely one of, if not maybe the best example of a godly woman in the Bible. She is humble. She's faithful. She's, you know, just a servant. She's willing to work. She's persistent. She's all the good qualities that a godly woman should have. She left everything that she had in her homeland of Moab to go with Naomi. Look at verse 16 of chapter 1. And Ruth says, so this is after Naomi's like, you guys just stay here. This is your home. You guys stay. I'm going to go back home. And one of the ladies, Orpah, she leaves and she says, okay, I'll stay here. But then Ruth's response says, and Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. And so she's telling her, listen, I know my home is here. I know my family is here. I know my friends are here. I know this is where I grew up. I know the culture here. I know the customs here. I know how to live in this place. Maybe she had a job. Like, all of everything in my life is here. But I'm going to go with you. Your place, your people are going to be my people. Your God is going to be my God. Whatever you do, I want to do. When I married your son, I committed to being part of your family. And now, even though you're my husband, your son is dead, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to be with you anymore. We're family now, and I'm going with you. Whatever you do, I'm going to do. And that's the response that Ruth has, the faithfulness that she has to the vow that she made to a guy that's dead. She was free. I mean, she wasn't even an Israelite. She wasn't bound under the law of the Israelites. She was free to remarry if she wanted to. She was free to do whatever she wanted to, as far as that's concerned. But she chose to say, no, I made a commitment to this family, and I'm going to stick with this family. And so it's just she's a really cool lady to study out in the book of Ruth. We're going to get into some of it, but not everything you could talk about when it comes to Ruth. Okay, so Orpah, that's the other daughter-in-law. Her name means fawn. She's represents for us a sinner who rejects salvation. She's a Gentile who likes the idea of joining God's family, but she counted the cost and decided to return to her own gods and things of the world. Okay, so Orpah, she gets a bad rap in the story, and I mean, she should. But to a certain extent, I think maybe a lot of us would have been in that same boat. How many of us want to leave our families, leave our homeland, leave everything we know, and go somewhere else just because we married somebody who has already died and their mom is from that place, right? I mean, it's kind of a little bit of a stretch to say, well, obviously she should have gone. I mean, now Ruth went, and that was the right thing to do. But Orpah, you know, she made a decision to stay and to not go back. She probably got remarried. She didn't have any kids at the time, neither did Ruth. Maybe she got remarried, she started having kids, she had a family, and, you know, life went on for her. We don't really know anything else about her story, but she pictures for us that she had an opportunity for salvation, right? Now, not in the same sense that we get saved, but she had an opportunity to join the Israelites, to become an Israelite. And in the Old Testament, that was the way to have a relationship with God. To be saved was to be an Israelite, to be a Jew. And she had an opportunity to go with them and do that, just like Ruth did. And she rejected that. Okay, so people hear the gospel all the time, and they're not ready to receive it. Because what it means is, okay, I want to get saved. I like the idea of being saved, right? I like the idea of what that offers me, the benefits that comes from that for me. But do I really want to give my life over to the Lord? Do I really want to commit to following the Lord with my whole life? Do I really want to give up the things that I like about my life now, right? There are things when you're lost, there's things about your life that your flesh wants to keep. And when you make a commitment to get saved, what you're saying is, God, I'm all in with what you're offering. I know that the benefits for me is salvation. I get to spend eternity in heaven with you. But, you know, that requires some sacrifice. I'm going to have to give up the things that I want in order to do the things that you want for me, right? It means I'm going to have to read my Bible. Maybe I don't really like reading my Bible. It means I'm going to have to not do what I want to do, but I'm going to have to do what you want me to do. And so she counted the cost, Orpah counted the cost, and she decided it's not worth what it's going to take for me to go back with you. I'm going to stay here. So it's a picture for us of somebody who rejects the offer of salvation. Boaz, his name means strength. He represents the Lord Jesus Christ, the kinsman redeemer and the bridegroom who purchases his bride and an inheritance for her. And then the nearest kinsman represents our old sin nature that we have from Adam. Before we are redeemed, we are in the fallen family of Adam. And we'll talk about that nearest kinsman in a minute when we get to that part of the story. Okay, so the book of Ruth can be divided into four sections. The first one is Ruth deciding. That's your blank, is deciding. Does everybody have pens?
You don't have to write any pencil, raise your hand.
Just grab one, Ollie. There's a bunch of them. Bruh. I'm listening. You guys are terrible at catching. I'm like an assassin with these pens, and you guys are not catching anything. Oh, intercepted. Okay, the blank is deciding. All right, settle down.
That's my binder.
Your binder's right here. All right, Elias, what's your question? That one has your right name in it, too. Elias, what's your question? Shh, guys, settle down.
How did they know they were pregnant back then? Like, weren't they just, like, saying that they were, like, in that?
No. That a woman usually knows. They can feel it. Like, actually feel it. What? Deciding. Ruth, deciding. All right, this question. This section spans about 10 years. It covers the story of Elimelech, his wife Naomi, Oliver, and his two sons leaving the promised land when a famine occurs in Judah. They head to the enemy land of the Moabites. While in Moab, Elimelech's two sons marry Moab women. Elimelech and his sons die, leaving three widows in poverty. Naomi decides to return to Bethlehem for food. The daughter-in-laws must decide if they want to stay with Naomi and travel to Bethlehem or stay in Moab. Orpah decides to stay in Moab. Ruth decides to stay with Naomi and return to Bethlehem. Candy bar bonus question. Elimelech and his family leave the promised land. They left Bethlehem and Judah. What does Bethlehem mean? What? You cheated. You did not know House of Bread is what Judah or is what Bethlehem meant. No chance. All right. You want one of these or you want a cookie? This one? Huh? What in the world? Audrey, you're an athlete. You should have been able to catch that. All right. It means House of Bread. That's your blank. House of Bread. The candy bar bonus questions today are tricky. I'll admit they are very difficult. I don't know how anybody would have known House of Bread. I didn't know House of Bread. I just have the teacher copy that has the blanks filled in. Otherwise, I would have had to look it up as well. What? Yeah, I know. All right, wait till we get there. Okay. Shh. Ladies in the back row. No, you. I'm looking at you, Lily. Yeah, you're in the back row. They're on a couch. That's different. Elimelech does not live up to his name. Shh, guys. Elimelech does not live up to his name. When things get tough, while in God's place for him, Elimelech looks to the world to meet his needs. He takes his family with him. It costs him his life. As long as our families are outside of God's will, there will be no blessings. For you guys, you can replace the word families with yourself. As long as you are outside of God's will, there will be no blessings. Alright, another lesson for us, the lack of faith and disobedience in the parents is passed down to the kids. Elimelech's sons married Gentile women from Moab. The sons die. Okay, so I know this doesn't directly apply to you guys now because you don't have kids yet, except for those three and myself. Elias. Those three right there. The adults on the couch.
How you missed this, bro?
Yeah, the dude with a beard who looks older than a teenager. Okay. Yes, thank you. We all do. We all are. But the things that we do are passed down to our children. Okay, the routines that we get into, the habits that we have, the way that we live, and to some degree is passed down to our children. You guys, the way that you live, especially if you have younger siblings that look up to you as an example, like they see what you're doing. They might not exactly follow in your footsteps, but a lot of times they do. They get caught up in the same things you guys get caught up in. They like the same things that you guys like because you guys are cooler to them because you're the older sibling and they look up to you. And so they desire, guys, ladies in the back, stop.
Please.
They desire to live up to. You all right, Oliver? Okay. All right. Another lesson for us. Naomi is poor, hopeless, and empty. She returns to the House of Bread. But not for the right reasons. She is not getting right with God. She just wants the blessings. Okay, so Naomi is not like repentant, and it doesn't say that she recognizes that she was wrong when they left. Right? She comes back and she's bitter and she's mad at God. Aaron, she's mad at God for the way that all the things that happened to her, right? She's like a victim. She's like, everything happened to me. It's just not fair. I'm bitter about it. God did not deal right with me, and I'm not very happy about it. Right? That's not the heart or the attitude of someone who's repentant. Someone who could look at the situation objectively and say, me and my husband made a bad decision for our family. We left the promised land, the land of the Israelites, the land that God gave us. We left it, and we went to the world. Cameron, shh. And we went to the world. You guys good? Okay. And bad things happened because we turned away from God. That's the way that she could have looked at it. And she could have been repentant and said, man, I wish that I would not have turned my back on God, Elias and Oliver. Quiet. But that's not the attitude that she does. She doesn't have a repentant heart about the situation. She comes back bitter. And she only comes home because she can't continue to live in Moab because they don't have any money, right? Her husband's gone. Her means of supporting herself is gone. She doesn't have a way to continue living in Moab. So she decides to return home out of convenience. And again, fleeing a bad situation and trying to find a better place for her physically. That's what she's after. She's not after the repentant attitude aspect of coming home. Okay, Ruth and Orpah receive the same invitation to leave the emptiness of Moab and return to God's house of bread. Ruth accepts. Orpah counts the cost and stays in her present condition. When Naomi returned from living outside of God's plan, her people did not recognize her. Living in the stress of disobedience and hopelessness will affect your physical appearance. Living the way that the world lives is hard. If you guys ever come to Life Issues on a Friday night, you can see the effects of addiction on people's faces. Literally, you can see it. Right? If you've ever been around somebody who's been addicted to drugs for a long period of time, you can tell just by looking at them that they've been through some stuff, right? They look rough, right? There's things about them that you can identify. The world does not, being in the things of the world does not benefit you physically, emotionally, spiritually. Like, it doesn't have anything to offer other than, you know, some happiness for a short period of time. But in the long run, it takes from you. The world takes everything that you have. Physically, it takes your emotional, mental, and spiritual, elements from your life. All right, number two, Ruth, serving is your blank. Serving. This section spans a few months. When Ruth and Naomi return to Bethlehem, Ruth just happens to begin working in the fields of a local wealthy man named Boaz. Boaz is a godly man who tells his workers to leave extra grain for Ruth. As it turns out, Ruth is a relative of Elimelech. Naomi is aware of the kinsman redeemer laws in Deuteronomy, and she begins coaching Ruth on how to proceed with Boaz. Ruth becomes a faithful servant to Boaz. The law of Moses had provisions for helping the poor who sold their land and to widows. So the law says if someone was in a tight spot and sold their land, a wealthy relative could buy the land back or redeem it and give it back to the original owner. So if someone was in a difficult financial spot and they were like, the only way to get out of this is to sell my family's land and take that money and pay off my debts or get out of the situation that I'm in, a family member could step in and say, I'm going to buy this land back and I'm going to give it back to that family member because they were going through a difficult time and their only option was to get rid of this family land. But I'm going to buy it back as their relative, as a family member, and I'm going to give it back to them. That was one way they could redeem somebody. Number two, if a widow was past childbearing years, they were to be cared for by the congregation. Number three, if a widow was young and still able to bear children, they were to be taken in and redeemed by their next of kin. This was so the dead man's name and posterity would continue. So number two, that's where Naomi finds herself, right? She's old, she's past childbearing age, her husband's died, and so she's a widow, in that sense. And then number three, that applies to who in the story? Ruth, who said that? Good job. Applies to Ruth, right? She's still able to bear children. We find that out because she has a child later on. And so it was up to the next of kin to step in and say, I will marry this person and I will have children as a recognition or as a, what's the word I'm looking for? As a...
Redeemer?
No.
Savior?
No. As like a... in memory of the person who died. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but kind of like a memorial, maybe. I don't know, as a tribute. Maybe that's a better word. As a tribute to the person who had died, right? I'm going to step in and I'm going to redeem this widow. And number four, if the widow's nearest kin refuses to fulfill the kinsman obligation of Deuteronomy 25, she can take off his shoe and spit in his face in public. That's what the Bible says. Then the next nearest of kin can choose to redeem her. Okay, so that is what happened in the story, right? The nearest kinsman, Boaz went to him and said, hey, listen, there's this widow Ruth. You're the nearest kinsman to her. Not technically, it actually falls on you to redeem her. Her husband's died. She's a widow. She's young enough to bear children. Cameron and Jessa. Do you want to step up and do you want to take this woman as your wife and raise up children for her deceased husband's name? In this case, the guy says, no, I don't want to do that. And so Boaz is the next nearest kinsman, and he says, okay, publicly this guy doesn't want to do it. I'm the next nearest one, and I do want to do that. And so that's how he's able to step in. So he wasn't the next of kin, but he was one step removed, and the next of kin didn't want to fulfill that obligation required by the law. All right, so the New Testament principles for widows are in 1 Timothy chapter 5. We're not going to look at those, but you guys have probably heard Pastor Brian say a widow indeed. Anybody heard him say that before? Yeah? That's like a widow who's a widow is somebody whose husband has passed away, right? A widower is someone whose wife has passed away. I'll see her in just a second. And so a widow indeed is somebody a woman whose husband has passed, but this woman is continuing to do the things, like that a godly woman would do. And so we would say that woman is a widow indeed. We have several of those women in our church who their husband has passed away, but they're still living a godly life. They're still, like walking with the Lord. And so the church has a responsibility or an obligation to kind of watch over and protect and step in and care for, if needed, that woman. Yes, Hallie, what's your question?
How would the female shoe off the man's foot when she pushed him over? Is they going to be like, hey, finish you for a second, and then...
The rest of the family members held him down while she took the shoe off. No.
What the heck?
No. I'm guessing he would give her the shoe. The guy knew it was coming. It was kind of a disgrace to not be the one to step in. Hey, the law says you're supposed to step in and do this. Right? It'd be like us not taking care of a widow in our church. If we found out that a widow in our church, who's a widow indeed, who's walking with the Lord, even though her husband's passed away, and she comes to the church and says, I cannot afford this medication. I can't afford to pay my rent this month. I'm really in a dire situation. I need help. And the church was like, nah. Go to another church. Find another church to help you. We're not interested in helping you. That would be a disgrace to us, right? We would step in. Our church has stepped in and helped these widows before, and we would continue to do that. And so it would be kind of the same thing. The guy who didn't step in, it was kind of a public disgrace. He knew it was his obligation to do that, and he was not willing to do it. And so it was more like the slapping of the, or the taking the shoe and the spitting in the face was like, I want everybody else to know you're a dirtbag and you're not doing what you're supposed to do.
Refusing?
Huh? Yeah, she was supposed to. I don't think it actually says that she did it, but actually it might say that. Hold on. I don't see it, but yeah, I'm sure she did.
Chapter 4, well, in verse 7, it talks. I think it's the place where it talks about taking off his shoe.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So verse 7, chapter 4 says, now this was the manner in former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things, a man plucked off his shoe, so he took off his own shoe, and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said to Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe, and Boaz said unto the elders and unto all the people, ye are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion and Mahlon's of the hand of Naomi. So there you go. Okay, Candy Barbona's question. Ruth worked in the fields of Boaz. In the Bible, what do the fields represent? Yeah. No way any of you guys are going to get this. Brendan.
Corn.
Huh? Asian. That's pretty close.
The Lord's house?
No.
No.
The world. Wow, nicely done. The world. The fields of the world. So, Bryson, I think you were, like, on the right track. You were talking about the lost people, and what do you want? Why are you guys going with regular M&Ms? They're better than peanut M&Ms?
Yes.
They're not.
No way. No way.
Get some caramel M&Ms.
I don't even know where these came from, to be honest with you. They just showed up in the fridge one day. All right. And they were in the fridge, yeah. Okay. So the blank is the world, if you didn't get it. All right, so when Ruth arrives in... Oh, we got to hurry. We got almost out of time. When Ruth arrives in Bethlehem, she immediately goes to work. This is an indication of her character and why she is called virtuous. So she knows she's got to show up, and she's got to get to work. Her and Naomi have no food. They have no place to live. They got to figure something out quick, right? So Naomi says, hey, go to the field, and by law, they have to let you pick up the stuff that gets dropped, right? So go out and go to one of the fields and just start picking up the stuff that they've missed, right? And that'll be enough for us to eat. That'll be enough for us to eat and survive, right? And it just so happens that that's Boaz's field. And Boaz sees this, and he's like, hey, this widow over here is picking up everything that gets dropped. He tells his servants, he's like, hey, guys, why don't you drop a little bit extra, right? Maybe dump the basket over every once in a while. Give her some good stuff, not just the stuff that fell off the basket. Dump off some good stuff for her. And let's feed this widow and Naomi, her mother-in-law. All right, lesson for us number two. Ruth wanted a husband, but her priority was service in the fields. Ruth knew the right kind of man would be attracted to the right kind of woman. We need to be the person God wants us to be. Then God will bring a helpmeet into our lives. For all of you guys who are single in this room, which is almost all of you, the story of Ruth and Boaz... The story of Ruth and... Shh! Hey, shh! Jessa, shh. The story of Ruth and Boaz is a great example of how to find a godly wife and a godly husband. Okay, when Ruth says in chapter 1 to Naomi that I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to follow you. Wherever you go is where I'm going to go. She's saying that to her mother-in-law, but that is a great godly wife. So for you men looking for a godly wife, somebody who's going to follow you, right? Somebody who's going to go with you, and she's going to say to you, wherever you go, I'm going to go, right? If I told Brenda, hey, God's leading us to move to Africa, or we're going to move to Australia, or we're going to move to Canada, or wherever, Brenda would follow me, right? She's followed me before. Brenda would follow me because I'm not just saying we're going to go somewhere. I'm saying God is telling us that as a family, we are committed to going somewhere. Right? Brenda would follow me. Men, young men, look for a woman that will be willing to follow you. Young ladies, do not be willing to follow a man who's not following the Lord. Okay? Look for a man who's following God and get in behind him. Follow along with him. Right? Yes? Okay, great. Number three, Ruth, resting. The blank is resting. We're going to speed through some of this because we don't have time to get into all of it. Naomi wants to find rest for Ruth. Naomi and Ruth believe that Boaz is the nearest kinsman, therefore he should fulfill the kinsman redeemer obligation. However, he's not the nearest one, and so we already went through that. The lesson for us, a husband should provide rest and protection for his bride. Young men, pay attention to that.
You guys can
know. Number two, Ruth did not doll herself up and seduce Boaz. Ladies, pay attention to this. She humbly, modestly, and patiently laid at his feet. This was an act of submission to her Redeemer. Ruth was there to petition to fulfill a promise in the law. If we desire Jesus to fulfill a promise to us, we should lay humbly at the feet of Jesus and boldly make our petition known. Right? We should go to the Lord humbly and say, God, I need your help. Right? I'm submitting to what you tell me to do. As a Christian, that's how we should approach the Lord. It's not, God, give me this thing. Bless me with this thing, help me out of this bad situation. It's going to God and saying, I'm going to submit to whatever you say. My actions have got me where I am. I need your help to get out of it. What do I do? How do I get out of this? Right? Approach it humbly. For those who have trusted Christ for salvation, Jesus promised to redeem you. He gives us his Holy Spirit as the earnest or down payment until the redemption actually occurs. That's in Ephesians 1. True or false? According to the Kinsman Redeemer Law, Oliver.
True?
Jacob.
False.
False.
I actually already had it down.
No. Oh, did you? Okay. What do you want?
Cookie.
No, she did not. Nobody wants peanut M&Ms. The second best M&M variety.
What's the first?
Oh, peanut butter is number one for sure. It's not even close. Those brownie ones are pretty good too. Okay. Number four. Number four. Ruth rewarded. Rewarded. Boaz confronted the nearest relative at the city gate. Why would Boaz do this at the city gate? Oliver.
So they could be alone?
No. Cameron.
Because, there's Jews and they weren't allowed.
Nope. Tristan. Yes. It's like the center of the city where all the activity happens. Cookie? Golly, you guys are crazy.
I also don't like nuts.
Alright, the city gates is like where everything was happening. It's like the town square kind of thing. Alright. Wrapping it up. Ruth, a virtuous woman. There are many great women in the Bible. However, there are only two women who are called virtuous. The virtuous woman of Proverbs 31, who's not named specifically, and Ruth. Virtuous women have excellent moral character as defined in Proverbs 31. Ruth displays seven character qualities that line up with the qualities found in Proverbs 31. She is faithful. She's hardworking. She's humble. She's a giver. She's modest. She's patient. And she's steadfast. Oliver, stop doing that. Some major types or similitudes in Ruth. Famine. Shh. Famine is a type of God's judgment. Bethlehem is a type of God's provision, the house of bread. The fields of harvest is the multitudes of people who need to be saved. Seeds have been planted, the fruit is ready. The Lord needs labor or workers to harvest the fruit. Removing the shoe is a type of feet or shoes in the Bible represent your walk with God. Removing his shoe indicated that he was failing to have a good walk with God. He was not fulfilling his obligation. All right, and then some truths. There's several of them. I want to look at a few of them, but look at number three. Straying away from God will cost you something. Sin never leaves you better than it found you. That is, if you can remember that, that will serve you well throughout your whole life. That is a really, just key phrase or sentence for you to remember. Sin will never leave you better than it found you. The things that the world has to offer are appealing on the surface. That's the whole point, right? The things that we desire that the world has to offer appeal to us at some level on the surface. But the deeper you get into those things, the more you find it to be, it was only the surface level that was appealing, right? It doesn't leave you better than it found you. The Word of God, the things of God, leave you better than it found you. Nobody ever, falls away from Christianity and just says, my life got so bad when I started following the Lord, right? They get drawn away because they think other things that the world has to offer is more appealing than what God has to offer. And so they turn away from the Lord because they desire to let their flesh have what it wants, right? But nobody ever turns away from God and says, my life was just miserable when I was walking with God. I had no joy. I had no happiness. Everything started falling apart, right? That's not how things work with the Lord. The way God works is he leaves you better than he found you. The world is the exact opposite. Sin will never leave you better than it finds you. That's just a really good thing to remember. All right, let's just read the conclusion, then be done. I have a couple more things to say, but we'll maybe save it for Wednesday. The conclusion, how does this help me Monday morning? Ruth became the wife of a godly, wealthy landowner, the great-grandmother to King David. She was a blessing to Israel and part of the lineage of Christ. We talked about that before. One of only two ladies named in that lineage in Matthew. But before all that, she went through some tough times. Famine, the death of her husband, no children, journey to a foreign land, homeless. Ruth is an example of Romans 8:28. Which says, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are, that's missing a word, the called, according to his purpose. No doubt she questioned what God was doing, but she did not lose faith. When we are going through tough times, we need to remember God is in control and to cling to him and his promises like Ruth did. Things are not always going to go great, right? Your life is not going to be, just because you walk with the Lord, and just because he doesn't leave you worse than he found you, doesn't mean that everything's going to go perfectly. right? Her life certainly was not perfect up to that point. It wasn't smooth sailing. I listed some things that happened to her there. I mean, the death of a husband, that's a tough thing to deal with, among other things that happened to her. But through that, she's like, you know what? I'm going to go with Naomi. She is able to become a Jew and to have her life redeemed by Boaz because she went through the difficult times. Had she not gone through those difficult times, they would have continued living in sin in Moab. She would have continued worshiping the gods of Moab. She probably never would have returned or never would have come to Israel, right? She never would have met the Lord on a personal level, right? She never would have had those things if that adversity had not come in her life. And so that verse in Romans 8 that says that all things work together for good. Cameron, stop. That applies to us as Christians, right? Even when things are difficult, God can use those things and does use those things to redirect us and to guide us into something that may end up being better for us in the long run. And so don't get discouraged when things get difficult. Just continue to put your faith in God. Trust that He knows what's best for you more than you know what's best for you. And God will come through. God will deliver, just like He did with Ruth. All right, let's pray and be done. 10:16, not too shabby.